from stpetecatalyst.com.
I'm Bill DeYoung, and welcome back to Arts Alive, the podcast of the St. Pete Catalyst. Our guest today is our old friend Jeremy Douglas, composer, musician, arranger, producer, you name it. If it's musical, he'd probably play the kazoo if you asked him. He's nodding his
terribly,
head.
Yeah.
And we're here to talk essentially about your role for about 8 years now, I understand, which is as the musical director for Jobsite Theater, which is the resident theater company, of course, of the Strass Center over there in good old Tampa. Hey, Jeremy.
Hi.
Good to see you again.
Good to see you.
We're in the middle of the Rocky Horror Show.
Almost the middle, yeah.
I got lots of questions there. Let's start with this, though. It's been, I think David knew it was going to be pretty successful, but it's kind of exceeded expectations now, hasn't it? It's doing really great boffo B.O., as they say.
It's a blast. It's really fun to be part of a hit show. If I can quote my friend Matt McGee, who said that to me just the other night as we were walking to our cars after the show.
Yeah. And he's been in a lot of hits. He's been probably in a few that weren't hits too. But how do you gauge a hit? Is it full every night in the Jabe?
Yeah.
Wow.
Between the two previews and then Friday, Saturday, Sunday matinee, it's been a packed house. Yeah.
You know, I saw that coming. Really, with like a known commodity like this.
Right.
And it's right in the job site wheelhouse.
For sure.
Really, of like bizarro.
Yeah.
So are you having fun?
I'm having the most fun I think I've had on stage in over a decade. And no slight to the other shows that we've done. They've all been great. I love them all like my children. But, man, there's something about this one.
And is the band on stage for this one as well?
Yeah.
So that's the way it was in Alice, which is you were here a year ago talking about job sites in Alice.
And Alice was weird because the other two guys in the band with me were obscured by pieces of the set, so it looked like if you were sitting directly in the center, I was the only
was just
musician
you.
On stage. But no, the whole band is visible. It's five pieces, and we got Kenny Walker on bass and Mark Warren on guitar and Elwood Bond on drums and Ronnie D on the saxophone.
Yeah, I heard Ronnie was in this band.
That was my get. Yeah, I got him, and I'm proud of it.
That's for all that sort of doo-wop-y rock and roll stuff in this show.
That's it. That's where he was born and raised.
Yeah. So, I mean, when the band is on stage like that, do you feel like you're part of the cast? I mean, it's not like when you're backstage, at least you could, turn around and blow your nose or something. You really can't now. You're part of the cast.
I can't speak to the other musicians because, I mean, they come in, just a few days before we open, mm-hmm. and they do their show. But I was, as music director, I'm there from the table read.
Yeah.
So I do feel like part of the cast. There is a line that we have to walk, though, because, we can't pull focus away from what's happening on the stage.
Right.
So walking that line is really interesting, because somebody's going to call out, inevitably, there's going to be some audience participation that's just absolutely hilarious. And, somebody broke me the other night, and I laughed harder and longer than I should. But it's a party, and I think it's okay. As long as we're not, drawing attention away from the people who are doing their jobs.
Have you been pelted with toast yet?
No, there's a no-throwing rule. It's very strict. No throwing things at the stage.
Good. Yeah. I know this thing can get way out of hand real fast.
And David Jenkins, he comes from he ran a Rocky Horror Shadow Cast in Jacksonville for maybe 10 years, maybe, a long time ago. So he knows he knows what could happen. and he's been quite skittish about it, the worst of it. And he's come out and done curtain speeches and made it very clear.
So he comes out and says, now, kids, I know you really want to get involved and throw stuff.
Right. And there's another line that we have to walk there because he says this in his curtain speech. There's some folks in the theater that think it should be, you got to be quiet like you're in church. And there's some folks who think it's a Rocky Horror Show and all holds barred or no holds barred.
Yeah.
And we have to walk this line right down the middle of it. It's a murky line where we're trying to be respectful of actual humans on the stage, mm-hmm. not a movie screen who can't hear what you're yelling at them. But also, we don't want to stifle the party atmosphere.
One of the things that I thought of, and you made mention of this a minute ago, is that as musical director, you're there as part of the first concept meeting. Mm-hmm. First, like, we're sitting, how are we going to put this on its feet?
Yeah.
Right? And so, I mean, has there ever, I was thinking about like what you did for The Smuggler, you know? I mean, sometimes it's more, it's bigger, and sometimes it's more subtle.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you're there, sometimes you're recorded, you know? But this is an all-hands-on-deck, full frontal thing, if you will.
Yep.
I mean, are there times in those meetings when they say, well, I don't think we need music in this, or is that always because you're there, always going to be part of it? Rocky Horror notwithstanding.
Well, yeah, there actually, we've had that conversation about Rocky Horror. In the book, for all the musicians, there's underscore for almost every time the narrator comes out and does a thing.
Mm-hmm.
But that's tricky to do because the narrator is never going to be on rails in the Rocky Horror. He's going to get stopped. He's going to have audience lines called back at him.
He's
going to play with the audience, and the music is written out to, you know, you go on this line, and when he hits this line, you maybe change to this. There's some safety measures here. Mm-hmm. You loop for a little bit while you wait for your cue. It's never going to work in Rocky Horror the way it is now. So we threw out all of the underscore for the narrator, and that was, you know, yeah, there's conversations like that happening all the time.
Well, the other thing I was curious about was something that is so, it's the ink is dry. Your job is to arrange these songs. I mean, it's not like you're composing any new music.
I'm not really.
Aren't you the pit orchestra in My Fair Lady at this point?
Well,
play the page, son.
Okay, so Rocky Horror has had some evolutions since its inception.
Yeah.
It went from the London cast and the Roxy cast, and then it did the movie, and then it has its current music theater incarnation. And that's the books that we have, the current mm-hmm. music theater incarnation. And we made some decisions very early on that we don't really like the current music theater incarnation of Rocky Horror. It's very squared off. It's very music theater. What we really liked was the Roxy version.
Mm.
It sounds almost like a gospel soul band.
This is 70s, are we talking?
Yeah.
This was way back.
Predates the movie. And the movie score is completely different, too. It sounds almost like an Alice Cooper record.
Mm-hmm.
So we decided that we were going to not throw out the book entirely because that's our form, but we were going to not really take the book's guidelines on what everybody's part was. And we were going to copy the parts from the Roxy. And even import some ensemble vocals that aren't in the books that are in the Roxy recording and bring them over. So, yeah, we cobbled together our own perfect version of the show.
But you, musically, you have to have your teeth everywhere. You have to understand exactly how it works and how they play with the scenes, how the songs fit. And,
yeah,
Are you free to adapt things? Let's put this here.
I mean, maybe in rehearsals, yeah, we're free to adapt. But once the show is running, then there's expectations from the cast. They need it to go a certain way.
So I'm not
going to throw them any loops or anything like that. But in rehearsals, yeah, we feel free. I did ask David early on. I was like, I don't really like the books. Mm-hmm. I don't really like these parts.
Yeah.
Are we free to just abandon these books and do whatever we want? And he was like, absolutely. Do whatever you want. So I was like, all right, great. Then we're going to do the Roxy version because that sounds like a gospel band, and that's what I wanted.
That's very, very cool.
Yeah.
Well, what's your history with Rocky Horror? I mean, do you have one?
Shamefully, no, I don't. I got dragged to a midnight showing in high school.
So did I.
It didn't connect.
So did I.
I didn't connect with it.
Neither did I.
I mean, I appreciated my friends who dragged me that they loved it. But, like, you know, like it. When I was in high school, I was a jazz snob. So it's like it didn't really connect with me. Thankfully, I'm no longer a jazz snob. That's a terrible way to be. and I absolutely love this show. I think it's really great.
It is a lot of fun, and I can remember years and years and years when it became the phenomenon that it became, and I had a lot of friends who were really into it.
Mm-hmm.
It just never appealed to me, but I could see the appeal.
Yeah.
You know, I always understood it.
Yeah, I'm not going to poo-poo it or anything like
that. Oh, no.
It just didn't resonate with me personally at that time.
When did you stop being a jazz snob? When did that happen?
I don't know. It was a very slow evolution of that. You know, jazz was my was my bread and butter, if you can call it that, forever. That's what I did, and to make money, were, you know, to fill in the gaps, I would do club dates and top 40 bands and stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's a, to, for me, that's a creative dead end. You're playing the same tunes over and over mm-hmm. again, and I think, you know, when I started with JobSite 8 years ago, I was enamored with this, with the using music to tell a story.
Mm-hmm.
I've always loved storytelling, and you know, for a while I was a 70s prog fan. There's a lot of overlap between jazz and the prog movement,
of course,
of the 70s. Of course. And I think I liked the storytelling aspect of prog. These long form, you know, songs, and you get a whole album that's a concept album, and that music theater now to me is the concept album come to life.
Does this mean that JobSite is now going to do Tales from Topographic Oceans?
I mean, if we can figure out how to stage it, and I can convince them to do it,
you get to wear your cape.
I would love to do that, or you know, The Lamb Lies Down on Broadway, or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, like that, like Lizzie, the first show that I did, is essentially with JobSite, is essentially a prog album.
Yeah,
it's a concept
it's
album.
It's a rock opera.
Right. It tells a story from beginning to end, and you know. And I suspect that a lot of musicals get written like this right now.
Mm-hmm.
They start as a concept album, and then some people come along and figure out how to stage it.
And you say Jesus Christ Superstar? Because the record is still just, for me, the benchmark.
It's tremendous.
All the production stuff kind of diluted it, even, you know, a little bit here, a little bit there.
So in my head, there's a natural progression from jazz to progressive rock to music theater.
Boy, when you say it that way, I totally understand it. Well, the collaborative process is so different in theater, though. Mm-hmm. I mean, are there other musical people whom you might consult and say, what, or is it all basically they look to you to figure it all out?
Well, I mean, I'm not an authoritarian, and when I have somebody like Ronnie D in the room who has like such a knowledge of music of the era that Rocky Horror is sending up, because Rocky Horror is sort of like the 50s squared off 50s clash with the more freeform 70s.
Yeah,
and what happens, you know, when those things clash together? And Ronnie D is so steeped in so much of that of course I'm going to take his advice when he says, you know what, the snare would actually probably do this pattern. And like, yeah, that makes sense. Of course, let's do that.
There's a tremendous creative team, and I have it all written down. Of course, can't figure out how to look at this. I mean, I was looking at these people. You know, Alexander Jones has done the choreography.
What a genius that guy is.
The roster of talent here. And, of course, Joe Avril Snell has done your light design. She does all the great lights here in town. Michael Horn, who's an old friend of ours, has designed the set.
Mm-hmm.
Michael's been doing a lot of work for JobSite lately.
Right,
And, of course, Katrina Stevenson, who's been in this room with me, costume design. I don't know Taya Banks, who's your prop maker.
Prop master, Taya Banks, yeah.
There you go. I mean, that's the thing is sometimes with JobSite or with Freefall or Stageworks or American Stage, you see a lot of people, you go, this is a classy bunch of creatives right here.
Right, and this is the standard JobSite stable. You know, it's become normal to work with geniuses. I kind of love it.
Has your self-definition completely changed? I wrote this down, so let me spit this one out. The way you describe yourself to somebody, are you a musician first, or are you a theater person first? I mean, do you think of yourself as, this is what I do now?
I think that that's a tough question to ask. I've
stumped the band.
You have. I guess back in my club date days, my identity was pianist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's how I identified myself. I'm a piano player, and I play music for drunk people. I'm essentially an alcohol salesman. but now, I feel like my identity has shifted away from that into more of a more in a creator and a designer role, which
I feel like a better fit now.
It does.
Yeah.
It's, and especially with the Bjorkestra. The Bjorkestra helped that quite a bit, too, to sort of solidify that I'm no longer, you know, out trying to sell booze. I'm actually creating experiences. I'm part of a team that creates experiences.
Well, as you said, I mean, you compose. You write a lot of stuff. You arrange. I've seen you working in your studio at home and overdubbing things, and it's amazing. Theater must be a good outlet for that, too. I'm thinking of some of the, not soundscapes, but some of the musical kind of environments you created for a couple of jobs, I think. So Smuggler was one. Misery was another one where you can play.
Yeah,
it's not just a, here's my latest pop song for the show, folks.
Right.
You know.
Well, it's creating music that really can't live out very, very well outside of its context, but inside the context, it's vital, it's important, and it's valued. And so, yeah, I like that. I don't mind the ephemeral nature of it. That you know, because we're on to the next thing, and now I'm adopting another style. I'm thinking in a different box. And it's always fresh. It's always something new.
You mentioned the Bjorkestra. We're talking about the Florida Bjorkestra, which is this incredibly elastic, elastic super band that you created a few years back.
Yeah.
The Bjorkestra is coming back.
It is.
Let's talk about that in April. It's been a few years.
It's been like maybe four. Five.
It was like pandemic time.
We had a show that got canceled by the pandemic, and we're bringing that show back.
That's Buffy Fest. You're going to do this again? Now it can be told, folks. Describe the Florida Bjorkestra, maybe for those who have no idea what we're talking about.
It is a very large ensemble. It's this next show is going to have, I think, 26 people on stage.
These are musicians and singers.
Yep.
And it
started off as an experiment with eight or nine people on stage. I'm a fan of Bjork. I like her music a lot. And I wanted to see what it would be like to arrange her particular electronic sound for acoustic instruments on a smaller scale. See what that would be like. What would happen? What would happen if I, you know, if I did that?
And what did happen?
People came and they loved it.
Yeah.
And so we did another show, and we were offered sort of like a guarantee of money up front that I could pay everybody. And that money, I looked at that money, and like, I could pay now maybe 12 people a respectable amount to come and do a show. Mm. And then the next show, they offered us more money, and I could pay 15, 18 people. Every time we did a show, I kept adding more members because they kept giving me more money.
Well, it's not just the music of Bjork, though. I've seen you do so much different stuff.
Yeah, it started off as Bjork, but then we branched out to sort of just to represent like really kind of niche pop artists like Kate Bush, Peter Gabriel, David Bowie, and then I had to sort of codify it, and you know, it's like sets on some rules, like what kind of artists are we not going to cover, I mean, because it is essentially a tribute band, and I know how people feel about tribute bands, and I probably share a lot of the
not
same
me
sentiments.
No, you know me, I love tribute bands.
I share a lot of the same sentiments. But
you got a full backline, a full band, horns.
Yep, got six horn players now and six string players.
So it's not just like let's play the tunes. It's
a reimagining.
It's a
reimagining of the music, but it's always like you know, I want it to sound like people who love the music reimagined it and presented it. Mm-hmm. It is a celebration of these artists by fans of those artists.
So why now? I mean, it's 4 years now. Why? Well, I'm doing it now.
Yeah, because Paul Wilborn from the Palladium invited me out to lunch, and he's like, "So Bjorkestra?" And I was like, I don't know, man. It's been so long, and I can't even imagine like hurting all those cats anymore. Mm-hmm. That's the biggest hurdle it's so many people, and they're all so busy. They're all working musicians, you know, just the logistics of finding a day that everybody can do the show. So he was like, "Well, what's it going to take for you to do a show?" And I was like, "Well, it's got to be a date so far in advance that everybody's already available. I'm going to need so much more money because that date's going to likely be in the middle of high wedding season. A lot of these guys are playing in wedding bands.
Oh, yeah. And
so I need to offer them something comparable to what they would make when they turned down a lucrative wedding gig to come do my show. And I need somebody who will do the admin work for me because I don't want to do it.
Yeah.
I don't want to email 30 people and line up schedules. And he's like, okay, we'll do all that.
You've emailed every, do you know who the players are?
Do you
have them all confirmed now?
Yes, and I've imported over some folks from JobSite who do their jobs so very well that why not ask them to do their jobs for me in the orchestra? And among them are some, you know, JobSite's admin team who call everybody and do scheduling for rehearsals and stuff.
So you had to look at theater schedules too and say, this is a date that they're not likely to be in a job site show at this time.
That's true.
Kind of thing.
And also, so yeah, I'm bringing over like Joe Avril Snell. She's going to run lights for Buffy Fest.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Like that kind of thing.
Tell the folks at home why it's called Buffy Fest. Let's plug that one in.
So this show, aside from all like the niche pop artists that we do, we also do a show. We've done it twice now, and this will be the third time.
Yeah.
Where we play the music from the musical episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. There's an episode in season, gosh, I'm going to lose a lot of my cred, where there's an episode late in the run where somebody comes and casts a spell over the town. It makes everybody sing and dance like they're in a Hollywood musical, whether they want to or not.
Mm.
And the songs are actually legitimately good.
Did you ever see that show called Schmigadoon?
Yes.
That was
fantastic.
Second season I couldn't stand it. I turned it right off. But the first season was so good.
Well, the Buffy the Vampire Slayer musical episode called Once More with Feeling is the standard bearer for how you should do a television musical episode.
Before next April, I'm going to go find it and watch it.
It's so good.
But, so I can talk about it.
I will caution you, though. You can't just watch that episode because the reason why it's so good is because it is the culmination of multiple story arcs that took place over several seasons. Yeah. Because one of the trick things about this spell that everybody's under is that they're not just singing and dancing. Because when you're in a musical, when you break into song, you're revealing things, right? That's the rules of music.
So it follows plot lines.
So they're revealing secrets that they've been keeping secret for years. And at the end of that episode, those secrets are out. You can draw a line in the show before and after that musical episode when things changed.
What's the date? It's April...
April 5?
April 5th, 2025 at the Palladium in Huff Hall. So is it all the Buffy stuff or are there sort of other sort of greatest hits? Do you do set of Kate Bush on the side or something?
The Buffy show is really only one set of material. We can get through it in about, 45, 50 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So the other set, the first set that we'll do has always been different. We've done like various Buffy soundtrack songs that have appeared throughout the whole run of the show.
Yeah.
But this time we're going to do another Joss Whedon musical project called Dr. Horrible's Sing-Along Blog.
I've heard of.
It's like a little mini movie that was split into three parts. Each part's 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And it's just it's a musical about a supervillain and a superhero and the girl that they both love.
That's coming up April 5th of next year. Jeremy Douglas, always a pleasure. Let's give one big fat wet kiss shout out to JobSite Theater.
Yeah.
And the Rocky Horror Show, which is on stage through August the 4th. Maybe longer, we're not saying, but it's doing really well, folks. And usually that means, David, you should extend the show. Let's just put it that way.
I would say by the time, this thing airs, maybe go check the papers to see if it's extended or not.
Okay, we'll leave that one in David's hands. It's jobsitetheater.org, and you can get your tickets there. And you might want to rush because, as I say, they're doing extremely well. Jeremy, always a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
We will see you down the road.
All right.